Hello, everybody. This is Deb Engel, and I'm happy to be here with you tonight to talk about writing and creativity and all of the things that you want to talk about this evening. As always, I've got a topic that I'm going to be covering, but I'm always eager to hear your questions and talk about some of the maybe the writing challenges that you're facing as well. So as we go through this next hour together, I hope that you'll keep in mind maybe some questions that you would like to come on the line and ask, and we'll do that during the Q&A section later on. Tonight's topic, though, is a fun one. I hope that you'll find it fun. It's one that is in some ways fairly simple, but is so, so important. It came to mind because, you know, I started thinking over all of the work that I've done in publishing over decades, actually. I've always been in writing. I've always been in publishing in one form or another, including being a magazine editor and writer and journalist and reporter and writing just about every kind of materials you possibly could think of. Now doing books, but I've done so many other things before that. All of it was great training for thinking how to write well, not just put words on paper, but really how to craft sentences that communicate, how to put together sentences and paragraphs and pages and stories so that they work, so they're well written, so there's a flow to them. And in all of the work that I've done, and then all of the people that I've mentored and coached in their writing, which is so much a part of what I do now, I've found that there are several common errors, some in writing itself, some in punctuation, some in grammar, which sound like the least sexy things there are in writing. You know, talking about punctuation and grammar sounds like diagramming sentences back in junior high school. But what we're going to talk about tonight, I've got a couple of kind of grammar-related things and then other things that are more related to actually improving the quality of your writing. All of them are so essential in coming up with the best final product, the most polished writing that you can possibly do. And, of course, that's what we're all going for, is that by the time we have a manuscript or a blog or a poem or whatever it is that you're writing ready to show to other people, especially if we're showing it to an agent or an editor, we want to have it as strong and polished and professional. I've gone through a lot of the common errors that I often see with writers and ones that I had to really pay attention to and still do in my own writing. And I picked out five of them that I thought could be most useful to you. So we're going to talk about those five tonight. I hope that you've got a pen and paper handy or a computer or a laptop, something to write with, because I will have you do just a couple of fun little writing exercises as we go along tonight. Then we'll open it up, we'll do some Q&A, and I know of one question in particular that one of you has that I think will be really helpful to everyone. And again, if you are thinking of a question that you'd like to ask, you'll have that opportunity a little bit later on. We'll start, as we always do, with a guided meditation. And often these guided meditations tie in very directly with the topics that I've chosen for the teleclass. In this case, this one is more kind of general, but I think you'll enjoy it. I think it will feel good to you. I hope so. And so, as always, all you have to do is just follow along, follow the sound of my voice. So what I'd like you to do is to get comfortable wherever you're seated. Close your eyes and start taking in deep breaths. Take in that first deep breath. Really fill up your lungs, and then let it out with a sigh. Take in another big breath, and let it go. And one more time, big breath in, and exhale. And then as you just let your breathing return to normal, go ahead and feel more and more relaxed. Sink even more deeply into your chair. Feel anything that's been on your mind, any internal chatter or distractions. Simply flow away with your next exhale. And know that truly there is nothing that you need to do for these next few minutes except simply relax, follow the sound of my voice, and let yourself experience whatever you experience, knowing that it is perfect for you. Now I want you to bring to mind a writing project that you have great hopes and dreams for. Could be a project you've started or one that you've had in mind but haven't yet begun. Could be one that's almost done or that's sitting in your desk drawer or on your computer ready to be shared with others. Whatever it is, a book, a blog, a collection of stories, a screenplay. Just bring it to mind. And now imagine that you Google it online. You put in the title. You put in your name. And then up it comes on the computer, fully finished. If it's a blog, there it is, ready to read. If it's a book, there's the Amazon sales page or the Barnes & Noble sales page with the full description of that book. If it's a screenplay, there's the description of the upcoming movie and the impending release. Just see it in its final form, ready and available to be purchased, to be seen, to be sold, to be enjoyed. And feel what it feels like to know that it's done. And not only that it's done, but it's out there in the world, on the internet, ready for consumption. The culmination of all of your hard work. Let yourself scroll through that sales page or blog or announcement or release, whatever form it takes online, and read every word that describes this work that you have created. With so much care, so much intention, so much of yourself invested in it. Maybe you see a photo of yourself with a short bio. Maybe you see reviews from readers or from the Library Journal or from Publishers Weekly or from people you admire, commenting on how meaningful your writing is to them. Maybe you see sales figures or ordering information. Just let yourself scroll through it and feel what it feels like to see it there, out in the world, fully formed. Feel how good it feels to know that this is yours and that people all over the country, maybe all over the world, are reading the words that you wrote or hearing them, seeing them, consuming them, taking them to heart. Feel the exhilaration, the sense of pride and accomplishment. And as you do that, just reflect back on the reason that you wrote it in the first place. your why. Why did it matter to you? Why was it important? Why did you invest months, maybe years of your life bringing it to fruition? As you feel once again how important it has been to you, feel the importance that it will bring to the lives of all those who read or see it. And again, acknowledge and honor yourself for seeing it through the challenges, through the times when you felt stuck, through the times when you questioned whether it was something that you could even do. Feel how important it was to keep going, to not give up, to share this part of yourself with the world. Now, if there's something that you are most grateful for in this moment, just go ahead and express that gratitude to yourself silently. And know what a gift it is that you can come back to this place, to this feeling, to this moment, and acknowledgement and honoring of yourself anytime. It is just a thought away. And that as you do, you are actively involved in the creation of your writing project, just as much as if you were putting words on paper in this very moment. Because seeing it, visualizing it, feeling it, knowing that it will come to fruition is at the very core of every creation. This is the heart of the work that you are doing. Now take in a big, big breath. Let it out with a sigh. Take in another big breath and let it go. And one more big breath in and exhale. Start to shrug your shoulders very, very slightly and gently. Feel yourself coming back into full awareness of your body. And then very slowly, and as you're ready, come back to your space and open your eyes. And I'll give you just a minute to fully come back, knowing that you get to keep the relaxation and hopefully the sense of peace and maybe the sense of joy, anticipation, exhilaration, whatever it is that you felt in that visualization. Hang on to that feeling. And after the call is over this evening, I would encourage you to take a few minutes to sit and write about what you felt. Because the more you can reinforce that in yourself, the more you can revisit it and feel that writing project, that book, that blog, that movie, again, whatever it is, as though it is already done, you are adding so much momentum to the completion. And you're reminding yourself, as we did in that guided meditation, why it matters. Okay. So kind of building on that, I just want to say how much I admire all of you for taking the time that you're taking to do your writing, to listen to this teleclass, to focus on that creativity within you. A lot of people feel that urge to write, but they put it in the drawer. You know, they file it away in their mind and their heart, and they say, yes, someday, after the kids are grown, after I retire, whatever. And then, of course, it never gets done. So you are part of that small group of people on this planet who know how important it is, and you are sticking with it. And truly, truly, give yourself so many kudos for that. Okay? All right. Well, let's move into the five common mistakes and how to correct them. And I hope that you will take notes as we go along, because with a couple of these five things, I am going to ask you to do a little writing right here on the teleclass. With others, I want you to take the point that I'm going to make, and then after the call is over, I want you to use that point and go back through something that you've written when you have the time to look at it and see how you can use the point that I'm making to make your writing even stronger. So here's the very first one, and this may seem kind of like a no-brainer, but it is remarkable how many people don't really follow this. And no matter how aware of it you are, you may sometimes kind of fall off the wagon and not follow this guideline. So the mistake is that often people use kind of highfalutin language, and they don't use concrete words. So let me give you an example. This is from a brochure or a marketing piece about a health program. So it said, this diet is modified to place more emphasis on specific foods that have been shown to improve or maintain cognitive function. Now, that's a real sentence that somebody wrote. I didn't just make that up. That was in someone's marketing piece for a diet. Let me read it again. The diet is modified to place more emphasis on specific foods that have been shown to improve or maintain cognitive function. Even though I'm making light of this, I'm also doing that because I'm aware we all do this. Sometimes we just kind of forget that we're talking to human beings who like plain everyday language and concrete words. So when you think about how that could be rewritten, it could be something so simple as, the diet includes foods that are good for your brain. That's it. You kind of get that, right? This diet includes foods that are good for your brain. And then if you wanted to, you could go on and list some of those foods. But in 10 words, less than half the number of words as the first version, it says it so much more succinctly and clearly, and you get it right away. So what I want you to do is to go back through your writing, and literally, whether you do this on a hard copy or you do it in an electronic file, I want you to go through and highlight any sentences where you catch yourself being wordy, which we'll talk about a little bit more later, or using words that are vague, using three or four words where one or two would do, and where somebody would have to reread that sentence two or three times to really understand what it is that you're trying to say. Because, of course, one of the cornerstones of good writing is clear, quick communication. If people have to struggle to find out what it is that you're trying to tell them, you're probably going to lose them along the way. Part of that is that, you know, if you read a book that was written maybe back in the 1920s, certainly if you read a book that's more than a century old, probably the language is going to be more flowery. It is going to be more complex. It's going to be a little bit more from, oh, kind of a person on the pedestal point of view, more of a teaching kind of place of narration. But over the years, we have come to modify our way of speaking, and that's translated into what we write and how we read. And these days, we want things fast, we want them quick, and we want them easy. which doesn't mean that that's a substitute for good writing. It just means that the clearer you are, the better your writing is going to be. Okay? So number one, the way to correct that problem is use everyday language and concrete words, words that bring to you a picture. It's kind of like, you know, instead of maintaining cognitive function, there's nothing really concrete in there, but something that's good for your brain, you can see your brain, you can feel your brain. Brain is concrete. It's a word that everybody can just kind of glom onto and know what that means. So that's what I mean by concrete words, okay? So that's number one. Number two, this one is the mistake is that people often slip into what's known as passive voice rather than active voice. And I still catch myself doing it sometimes. Some of the most accomplished writers I know still fall into this sometimes. This is the people who are most susceptible to passive rather than active writing are people who have worked in academia or in government, either education or government, because often documents in those two realms are written in a way where nobody takes responsibility, sad to say. So let me give you an example of what passive voice is all about. This is an example of passive voice. The guests were greeted warmly with hugs and words of welcome. Why is that passive? Because there is no subject there. The guests were greeted. The guests, they're the object. But we don't have any idea who was greeting them. That's what makes it passive. So if you were to rewrite it, you could rewrite it as something like, Jane hugged each guest as she came in. Welcome, she said. I'm so glad you could come. Well, you can just feel how much more active, clear, and alive that is, rather than the guests were greeted warmly with hugs and words of welcome. So the problem with passive writing is that it creates a distance from the reader, both in time and space, because with passive voice, an action is done to something or someone, but we don't know who did it, so we can't really see the action happening, which means that we don't have a clear sense in our minds. You know, when we're reading, we're constantly creating word pictures. That's why we need those concrete words. And we also need to know who's doing what to whom so that we can see it. That makes it concrete as well. If we don't know who is causing the action to happen, then we're missing out on part of the equation. The other thing about passive voice is that it typically relies on weak verbs, which doesn't seem like that big a deal, except that weak verbs slow down and muddy the writing. Why? Because strong verbs provide the engine of action within a sentence. So, for instance, I'm just looking at that same example that I read before. The guests were greeted warmly with hugs and words of welcome. Greeted warmly is not that bad, but Jane hugged each guest as she came in. It just is stronger, right? Because we see Jane actually acting on that hug. We see the action. We feel that verb as it's happening. So strong verbs, this is where your thesaurus comes in. Weak verbs are going to be, you know, she walked. Well, there are 1,000 different ways of walking. Maybe she limped. Maybe she scooted. Maybe she strode. Maybe she come up with some other form of she walked that is more descriptive, that allows us to see the action more clearly, and that's what's meant by a strong verb. So one more thing about passive voice, it gets in the way of specific details that make writing come alive. And again, we saw that in that example. The guests were greeted warmly with hugs and words of welcome. Okay, so there are some words of welcome, but when you write it in active voice, we get to actually hear them with dialogue. Jane hugged each guest as she came in. Welcome, she said. I'm so glad you could come. So now we start to have a scene. Instead of feeling like, yeah, something happened somewhere to somebody, but we don't know where and who and what that sounded like, now we're right there in the scene, right next to Jane, as she's hugging people and she's speaking to them. And that's what makes it so much stronger. So here are a few sentences. I'm just going to read through these a couple of times. Jot them down if you like, because it seems silly, but this is a really good thing to practice. Practice taking passive voice sentences and converting them into active voice. So I'll give you these four examples. Write them down if you like. And then, again, I want you to go back through your writing and look for any places where you've used active voice or passive voice instead of active. Okay, so here are some examples. The obituary was written and the funeral was planned. I'll read that again. The obituary was written and the funeral was planned. That's about as drab and vague as it can possibly be, right? Here's another one. The gifts were opened and wrapping paper was scattered over the living room floor. The gifts were opened and wrapping paper was scattered over the living room floor. Okay? A lot of things, really, that you could do with that one sentence in active voice. Here's another one. She was placed on the gurney and wheeled to the ambulance. She was placed on the gurney and wheeled to the ambulance. And finally, flowers were placed on the table next to the bed. Whose bed? We don't know. Who put the flowers there? We don't know. Now, obviously, if you're writing a mystery, sometimes you're going to leave some of those questions unanswered about what happened or who did it. But that's a very different thing, because you can still do that in active voice. In this case, I hope you see the pattern to this, that there's just so much information missing and that it's very hard to get a visual picture of what's going on. Okay, so that's the second problem. More common mistake, using passive rather than active voice. And the thing about writing in active voice is that it's just so much more fun because you get to put in those specific details and the dialogue and the strong verbs. And that's the craft of writing that I think makes it fun for you as the writer to write as much as it makes it fun for the reader to read. Okay? So let's take a look at the third one. And this is one that actually you may disagree with me on. And if that's okay, that's fine. I know one writer that I'm coaching right now who's from a different country. The standard in her country is different than what I'm about to say. And so she kind of, you know, has a different way of looking at this. And that's just fine. But I think this is really important to share with you for you to at least consider. So the third mistake that writers often make these days is writing paragraphs that are just too long. And, of course, the antidote to that, the way to correct it, is pretty simple. It's just to make them shorter, right? So why is it important to write short paragraphs these days? This is something that has changed over time, just like the tone, the style of writing has changed. Back in the 1980s, the 1970s and 1980s, when USA Today first came out and became really popular, that newspaper was so instrumental in changing the way that we read, really throughout this country and in other parts of the world, too, because all of a sudden it was writing in short snippets, sound bites, short paragraphs, short stories, instead of newspaper articles that went on for columns and maybe on to another page or two with long paragraphs. These were maybe one or two sentence paragraphs that just made it very easy to skim. And we started getting used to reading that way. Then along comes the internet. And the fact that when we're looking on a screen, it's very difficult, isn't it, to read a long paragraph. It's really hard to read something on the screen if it's, you know, if the page that you're looking at is too wide and the lines are too long. We sometimes overlook the importance of those factors in legibility, but they're really critical, especially today, as we've all been trained to take in shorter sound bites. So the woman that I'm working with, who's in another country, she's, you know, in a place where it's still very standard to have longer paragraphs. So that's great. I understand that. But I just want you to keep this in mind and know that for your reader, it's very possible that your reader will respond better to your writing if you keep it short. And here's a rule of thumb that I love when I discovered this. This is by a man named John Ziomek, I believe is how you spell his name. And his tip is to use the 1-2-3-4-5 rule. So it's pretty easy to remember. The 1-2-3-4-5 rule is make sure your paragraph contains one idea, not two or three, but one idea, expressed in two or three short sentences, taking 4 to 5 lines on the page. So let me read that again. Make sure your paragraph contains one idea, expressed in 2 to 3 short sentences, taking 4 to 5 lines on the page. So really simple to remember. And it goes back probably to writing high school essays and thesis papers, right? You can probably remember your senior English teacher saying, for every paragraph, there needs to be one central idea. And if you start to try to cram more ideas into one paragraph, you're going to get confused as the writer, and your reader will get confused as well. So some of this is just basic to what we've always been taught. Each paragraph needs one central idea. But then the idea that you only need 2 to 3 short sentences to express it, and that those two sentences can take 4 to 5 lines on the page, that's something now that's more current and updated. It doesn't mean that you can't continue with that same idea in the next paragraph and maybe the next and the next. It just means that you are doing the reader the favor of creating shorter paragraphs that give your writing a sense of momentum. Because think about it. You know, if you're reading a paragraph that's maybe 15 to 20 lines long, somewhere halfway through that paragraph, it's probably going to feel like you're just sort of slogging through it, even if it's really good writing. But if you've finished a paragraph and now you're on to the next paragraph and the next paragraph and the next paragraph, it's going to feel like there's a flow there. And another thing that we don't often credit enough, that you may not really even think about, but is so important, is that if you just pick up a book, you know, an old-fashioned hardcover book, not an e-book or a Kindle, but a hardcover book or paperback book, you open it up, if you see a lot of long paragraphs in there, that means there's not going to be a lot of white space. The white space is just going to be in the margins, but you won't have a lot of indentations. You won't have a lot of white space left at the end of the paragraphs. And as silly as this may seem, that's going to make that book seem harder to read. If you open up a book and you see lots of short paragraphs, it's going to mean that there are going to be lots of short lines, lots of indentations, lots of white space, and that just feels more inviting. So that's true in hard copy books as well as on the screen, and that 1-2-3-4-5 rule can just make it so simple for you. Okay? All right. So that's number 3, the problem being people write paragraphs that are too long, so just shorten them up. Number 4, the problem is, or the mistake that a lot of people make, is that they don't really make a strong emotional connection in what they're writing. And this is true, you might think that this is just true for some kinds of writing, that it's only true if you're writing about something emotional, or if you're writing fiction and it's a really emotional scene, but that it certainly wouldn't be true for how-to or self-help. But in fact, making an emotional connection is essential for every kind of writing, because what makes an impact on the reader? It's always emotion. It's always feeling. No matter what we're reading, we want to feel something. And if we don't, then it just becomes kind of mechanical and robotic and doesn't really mean much to us. So here's an example. Again, this is from an actual piece of writing. It's taken from the back cover of a book, kind of the initial, it didn't end up this way on the book, but it was an initial draft. And let me just read that first and just see what you think of it. Okay, this book teaches the skills needed in the day-to-day management of any type of chronic condition in order to maintain and or increase an active and fulfilling lifestyle. It teaches self-managed lifestyle change and coping strategies to enable readers to manage their health condition, medications, and increase physical activity levels. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, as I read that, I just kind of zone out because partly there isn't a lot that's concrete. We don't have word pictures in it. There's a lot of redundancy, extra words, words that are sort of theoretical, and it's just not very specific. But most of all, it doesn't feel like there's any emotional connection. So let me read a rewriting of it and see how this one strikes you. If you have a chronic health condition, you may feel you're missing out on an active lifestyle. If so, this book will teach you how to manage your condition day to day, handle your medications, and increase physical activity so you can live the life you deserve. Now, I'm not saying that that's the best writing ever, but I'm guessing that maybe that feels like it makes a little bit more of an emotional connection for you. And let's take a look at the reason why. I'll read it again just real quickly. And pay attention to how many times there's the word you or your in what I read. If you have a chronic health condition, you may feel you're missing out on an active lifestyle. If so, this book will teach you how to manage your condition day-to-day, handle your medications, and increase physical activity so you can live the life you deserve. So it's actually the word you or your is in there 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times. That's part of the reason why it makes more of an emotional connection, because now instead of it being a distant, we're talking about the readers in third person, like that doesn't have anything to do with you. Now the writing is speaking directly to you. It's naming you, just like we do when we're talking to one another. Oh, you did this. Tell me about how your day went. Tell me what you did. We use the word you and your all the time. So to make an emotional connection, start putting in you. Also, use feeling words. For instance, if you have a chronic health condition, you may feel, so there's the word feel you're missing out on an active lifestyle. That feeling of missing out, everybody knows what that feels like, that there's something they want to be involved in, but they can't do it, and so now they're missing out on it. And that immediately creates an emotional reaction. You know what that's like. So just describing what pain or discomfort or disappointment or whatever it may be, describing it in some way, that's going to make an emotional connection. And at the very end, it says, handle your medications and increase physical activity so you can live the life you deserve. Live the life you deserve. That's something that sparks some emotional connection, right? You can feel that. You know what it feels like to live the life you deserve or to want to live that life. You can picture it, you can feel it, you can sense it and smell it and taste it and touch it. So that's what I mean by making the emotional connection. Use the word you and your, talk directly to the reader. And you can do this even in fiction. It's a little bit different process, but even in fiction, your characters are going to be talking with each other. Make sure that they're using the word you a lot. And even though you won't probably be addressing the reader directly, you can still create all sorts of descriptions of feelings and emotions that will make that connection for them. Okay, so the final one, and this is where I may not have you do this actually on the call because I do want to get to the questions and answers. So we'll kind of talk through it and then have you do this after the call is over. But the fifth mistake that I often see is that people just write too much. They don't write concisely or succinctly. They use too many words. They say too many things in pretty much the same way, which is what I just did. You know, I used four or five different ways of saying, write tightly, say what you mean. So here, again, I'm going to give you some examples. Here's a sentence that could be tightened up a lot. He went looking for a job on account of the fact that his dad died, and it was necessary for him to help support his family. Well, that one could be shortened up by saying something like, his dad died and his family was short on cash, so he went job hunting. Probably about half the length of the first one, and more concrete and specific. And you can feel it. It has more of an emotional connection. So you can see how all of these things really are linked. Here's another example. It's anticipated that the new supervisor will be hired within the next 2 weeks. Well, you could just say, we plan to hire the new supervisor in the next 2 weeks. Because that first one that I read, it is anticipated that the new supervisor will be hired. Passive voice. We don't know who's doing the hiring. We don't know who's anticipating. But in the second one, we plan to hire the new supervisor in the next 2 weeks. And the third one, this is my favorite, there are many ways in which a woman who is interested in meeting a potential spouse may make new acquaintances. Well, you could just say women can meet men in many ways, or women can meet their partner in many ways. Pretty simple. So that's something that I want you to do on your own. We won't take time to do this on the call. But again, I want you to go back through your writing and highlight sentences where you think, oh, I can say that in way fewer words. And then I want you to do one other exercise for me. And this is to take a page of something that you've written. And I want you to, just for the exercise, I want you to condense it down to half a page. And then I want you to condense it down to a fourth of a page. And then I want you to condense it down to two sentences. And if you've never done this before, you're going to be thinking, she is crazy. I can't take a page and put it into two sentences. But in fact, you can. You really, really can. I'll tell you, one of my very first jobs out of college was writing. I was an associate book editor for Better Homes and Gardens Books, which was such a fun job. And, you know, I loved making things and sewing. And so for these books, we would write instructions on how to make quilts and how to make cross-stitched samplers and how to make all sorts of lovely things for your home. But the thing was that often to write the instructions for an entire quilt, we might have had two paragraphs. And, of course, we always thought, well, that's impossible, and we always got it done. Because there's always a way to write tighter, and then to write even more tightly, and then to write even more tightly. And it is one of the best exercises, best disciplines that you can possibly do, because if you do that exercise enough, you will just naturally start writing more concisely. So, again, take a page, condense it to half a page, then a fourth of the page, then two sentences. And if you like, send them to me. I'd love to see them. Love, love, love. Okay? So, we went a little bit longer on that than I intended to, and I do want to be sure to take some time for questions. And I know that Billy has a question. Billy always has the best questions, and she's come up with another great one for tonight. So let me open it up to phone lines, and maybe what we can do, Billy, I know that you're there. Let's take a minute before we go to your question just to see if anybody else has a question, and if not, then we'll go to yours. If you do have a question, a comment, anything you'd like to share, just press *6 once and say hello, and we'll bring you on the line. And we'll wait just a minute for that. And I'll give you about 5 more seconds. Okay. Alrighty. Well, Billy, how about if you unmute your line, press *6 and come on.
Good evening.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
Very good. Thank you. I hope those 5 points were helpful.
They are. They are. Right. And I'm looking forward to doing this exercise of condensing a full page down to two sentences.
Yes. And it can be done. It can be done. Well, you emailed me a wonderful question that I think absolutely everybody can relate to in some way. You know, it's going to be a little different for everybody. But would you mind restating the question?
Sure. My short stories and novels feature strong female characters. I didn't have strong female characters, strong female role models growing up, and I don't know what that looks like. I don't know how to describe a strong female character. What does she do? What does she think? What does she say? What are the words she is likely to use? What's the body language she's likely to use in being this strong person? And she's not obnoxious. My image of a strong black woman is of a woman who is comfortable in her body, is self-aware, who speaks her truth with compassion and kindness and love, who is vulnerable but not attention-seeking, and who is transparent but discreet. Mm-hmm. And that's my vision of a strong female character, but I don't know how to write that.
Okay, great. Really such a good question, because you're talking about specifically strong black women, but everybody can use what we're going to do here for their characters, for their character development. So do you mind reading that list again when you said how you, the characteristics that you see? I got three of them down, but I missed the first two or three.
Comfortable in her body, is self-aware, who speaks her truth with compassion and kindness and love, who is vulnerable but not attention-seeking, who is transparent but discreet.
Okay, awesome.
And when I talk about her being vulnerable but not attention-seeking, she doesn't, she's very cognizant of how often she tells her story. She doesn't tell her story to test everybody, and so, you know, people are dodging her and avoiding her. So here she comes again, and we're going to hear some more about that.
Right.
But she allows people to see that she does make a mistake and that she has been hurt by other people, by the world, that she has gone through some things. She hasn't led this perfect fairy tale life.
Mm-hmm.
She's got some bumps and bruises.
Okay, great. I like the way you're saying that. And I really like the way the work that you've already done here of making that list of attributes, and would advise everybody to do exactly that same thing with their characters, especially if it's a character that you want to know better or that you just don't know how to describe. So, because really it sounds as though you know this woman pretty darn well.
Okay.
First of all,
I do.
So what I want you to do is I want you to imagine that you are in a restaurant and you're sitting and you're having lunch and you look up and you see this woman walk in the door and you see her come in and, you know, she stands there and waits for the host or the hostess to come, and then they come to seat her, and you just see her going through the motions of getting a table and sitting down. first of all, I want you to describe what you see in your mind as she walks in the door. What do you notice about her?
She's walking tall, walking erect. She looks relaxed. She looks confident. She has an aura about her that says, "I like who I am." She's dressed well, and when I say dressed well, I don't necessarily mean expensive, but that her clothes look good on her. She takes care of herself. That's evident. She takes care of herself. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't mind being alone in the restaurant, or if she's waiting for someone, she doesn't mind being the first one there and waiting for someone to show up.
Okay, so let's stop there because that's a lot of information already. And I want to go back and just take a look at a few of those things that you've mentioned because, again, there's a lot of information there. And already, as you say those things, I'm getting a strong sense of her. I'm guessing that everybody on the call is getting a sense of who this is. So would you say she's walking erect?
Mm-hmm.
I can see that, right? That's a posture. I can see her standing tall. When you say that she's relaxed and confident, those are more attributes. They're not descriptions of her body, how it looks, how she holds herself. So when you say that she's relaxed, just as you look at her in your mind's eye, what do you see that tells you that she's relaxed?
She strolls into the restaurant. She is not in a hurry.
Okay.
She waits patiently for the hostess to address her and see her. She doesn't, no agitated with an attribute to her. From a distance, I don't notice her eyes so much. She has a stride to her walk that is determined. It's an even stride.
Mm-hmm.
She is not hesitant when she walks.
Okay, great. Okay, so now let's go just a little bit deeper into this, because this, again, is so good. We've got even more of a specific picture. I love that part about she's not in a hurry. She strolls. Those words have that sense of relaxation. So now let's paint even more of a picture. So she's standing there waiting for the hostess to come or to take her to her table. And what would she do as she's standing there? Let me just ask you that question first. Before she even starts to walk, what does she describe what you see as you see her just standing there?
She walks to the hostess podium and maybe has her hand down at her side or gently crossed in front of her. She has a handbag with her, either a shoulder bag or one that she has to hang on to. She does not have her arms crossed.
Okay.
I want to say that her arms are at her side,
mm-hmm.
which gives me the impression that she's open.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Great. Okay. So again, let's stop there and kind of start putting some of these pieces together. Because when you say that she's standing with mm-hmm. her arms at her sides, a bag over her shoulder,
mm-hmm.
that alone tells me a lot, because it's, as I think of what I'd be doing, what I typically do if I'm standing waiting in a situation like that, you know, I am grasping my purse, I'm crossing my hands, I'm crossing my arms, I'm putting my hands in my pockets. To stand with your arms by your side, like you say, that's a sense of openness and a sense of real power. It's like somebody's got to have a lot of composure to just stand that way.
Mm.
So that's beautiful. You know, if you describe her as, you know, in the story, wherever it fits, it's just standing with her arms at her sides.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way to do it. You could also, it's always good when you are wanting to develop a character or to show, point out some of their characteristics to show the opposite. You know, so maybe she is standing in among a small group of people, the lunch crowd, and all of the others are tapping their toes, or they're checking their phones, or they're on their phones, or they're kind of darting their heads here and there looking to see if there are any empty seats. And in contrast, she's just standing there, perfectly mm. still, with her arms to her sides, with this look mm. of, you know, contentment on her face, just waiting.
Okay.
As you describe that, or, you know, if you do something like that, it's like, ooh, holy cow, that's a lot of personal control. And mm. you can feel, one of the great things about doing that contrast is that now you can feel her in the environment. You can feel that she is unaffected by her environment, and that's another sign of somebody who is really powerful, that she's not looking around to see what anybody thinks of her, to see when is somebody going to wait on her. She mm-hmm. is just very, it's like the sense that I get from her is that she just knows people will, are there to please her. Like that's mm-hmm. what she expects from the world. That's the sign of a really powerful person. I know that things are going to work out for me. I don't have to be making things happen. Things are going to unfold for me. That's the power that I have. That's, yeah. So look at, you know, putting characters in situations in which they really stand out as something different, because mm-hmm. in that contrast, you're really showing the reader deeply what and who they are. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah. And I wish we had way more time, because there's so much here. We could do a whole hour just about this. but let's talk about her. Well, let's go back to some of the first things that you talked about, like the vulnerability, because it sounds like that's really a key one.
Mm-hmm.
You want her to be, she's vulnerable, but not attention-seeking. So let's think of what's a situation that you could put her in, or that you have her in the story, just very quickly, in which you want to show her vulnerability. And it could be a minor scene. Yeah.
She is in a coffee shop talking on her phone with her mother. Her mother has called her. And as she's talking to her mother, she gets very upset and ultimately hangs up on her mother. And she goes out to the courtyard of the coffee shop and spends, 15, 20 minutes regathering herself, and goes back into the coffee shop. A man walks up to her table and ask if he can join her, and she says no. And it progresses on and he does join her. And he asks her, I don't remember his exact words, but basically, you know, I have noticed you here before, and I just want you to know that I'm here for you, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't tell him what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
And some people would be almost beside themselves waiting for somebody to ask them what's wrong so they could tell this person, well, this and this and this and this, and he's very discreet about it. In
yeah.
fact, by the end of the scene, she asked him to leave the table and perhaps and give her some space, and perhaps they can continue their discussion later. And
okay.
he leaves his business card and says, my phone and my heart are always open to you.
Hmm. Nice line. Okay, great. So you've already really embedded in the scene itself, in the interactions, that feeling of vulnerability. And now, you know, you may just want to milk it a little bit more, you know,
okay.
drive it home even a little bit more. The scene with her mother where she gets upset and hangs up, that's certainly a sign of vulnerability. And again, it's this is the great thing about the role that relationships serve in story, is that it's in the relationship where we see people exploring different sides of themselves, and we see that contrast. So just as we put her in, you know, a group of fidgety people, impatient people at the restaurant, now here she is at the coffee shop, and despite the fact, probably what you'd want to do is you would want to comment on her composure. You know, maybe this is the scene where she very quietly waits for her coffee to come, you know, that she's just kind of going through her regular routine. And then when you see her on the phone with her mom and you hear that conversation, mm-hmm. it's the contrast where you see her break and crack that you realize, oh, there's the vulnerability. That composure
yeah.
that we thought that she had, that there is strength, but oof, you know, she is vulnerable. There are certain people and situations that can get to her. So I love the fact that you've got her recomposing herself. I love the fact, you know, you can just make more of that fact that she has to take herself out of the situation. It's like she doesn't want to be seen in that vulnerable state.
Right.
So she removes herself from the public eye. She goes someplace private so that nobody will see her emotions and her feelings. She recomposes herself. Then she goes back in, and now we've got vulnerability of a different kind, you know, that he, this man, this stranger, has seen it, and he's drawn to it, but she doesn't want to reveal that to him. So
mm-hmm.
you've got a lot of dynamics just in this very simple, seemingly simple, but very significant setup for your character, because you've got the contrast with her mom, and you've got the contrast with the stranger. And those are the places where you can really pull out, just in her behavior and what she's saying,
mm-hmm.
How sometimes she just is not able to stop that vulnerability, and other times that she's working so hard to keep it under control. And I think really if you, you know, just let the story do the work for you, and it will convey so much of that power that you are, that she's got, you know, that she's
okay.
claiming for herself. Just in describing what's happening, the reader is going to feel it and feel that power in her.
Okay.
You know, we're going to read the times when she just can't help herself, but have deep
mm-hmm.
feelings like everybody, and other times where she's using that inner power and strength to kind of put on a facade or to put
mm-hmm.
on her best face
mm-hmm.
for people. Okay?
Okay.
So does that help? I mean, there's so much more
oh.
to talk about, but
that helps tremendously.
Okay.
Oh, thank
great.
You. Thank you.
Absolutely. And again, you know, keep thinking about putting her in situations in which she's threatened or she has something to lose. And then, mm-hmm. and they can be little things. They don't have to be, you know, big life-threatening kinds of situations, but just like little tugs of war, you know, little conversations at home, show how mm-hmm. she's threatened or she has something to lose, and then how she triumphs, or how she reacts when she doesn't triumph, or how she reacts when somebody does strike a chord in her and she wants to hide it. Putting your, it's the situations that you put her in that will really mm-hmm. show that inner strength over and over again.
Okay.
Great. Awesome.
Okay, great. Yes. Thank you.
Well, thank you for asking the question, as always.
Well, certainly.
So, well, it's just happy to have this whole hour with all of you. And as we wrap up for tonight, I do want to let you know the next teleclass will be December 19th. So put that on your calendar. I'll send out the reminder, as always, ahead of time. And in the meantime, you know, if you have comments, questions, writing your two sentences that you have condensed from a page that you'd like to send me, I'd love it. Send it to deb@deborahengel.com. And I always love to hear from you. So happy writing. I will talk to you in December and have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving in the meantime. Blessings to all. And so much gratitude. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.